Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the dean and founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I'm calling to you live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as we do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a great show set up for you today. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholtz, the founder of Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. She's calling in live today from Los Angeles. Hello, Linda.
Hello, everyone. Delighted to be here with you. I'm so excited for the show that we've got going today.
I am as well. Why don't you do the honors of introducing our guest?
I'd be delighted to. So maybe some of us listening today can relate to this. Our guest today became interested in filmmaking at a very young age when he got a fortune cookie that said, one of the greatest pleasures in life is doing what others say you cannot do. I know it resonates for me. I know, Gina, it resonates for you. So our guest today is Michael Perlin, and he calls himself a metaphysical filmmaker. And by filmmaker, it's in the truest sense of the word. He literally wrote, produced, and directed the film. The project is called The Three Magic Words. And that book is now in wide release and was picked up by Warner Brothers. And so while every filmmaker has their story that they went against all odds and made the impossible happen and cut corners each step of the way with obstacles in their path and all that, his story is about how you make something out of nothing, and in particular, how relationships come into play. And so I'm so delighted to bring Michael Perlin onto the show with us today. Michael, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi. I am so delighted to have you here. And, you know, you and I had an opportunity to speak, and we have mutual friends, and you know, I live in Hollywood, and I live in that world where we're so immersed in it that we lose track of the fact that it's that people who are listening to the show from all around the world have a different understanding of what it takes to go from an idea and a passion behind it and actually make it come to fruition in the world. And so it's part of what I'd like to spend time talking about today, and I know we're going to spend a lot of time talking about how relationships and relationship marketing come into play, not just in Hollywood, but in particular how it uniquely played out for you with this film. So welcome, welcome,
yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I can – go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. I just – if you were going to ask me something, that's great. I didn't want
yeah.
to interrupt you. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gina, as I was thinking about Michael's bio, I was thinking about the fact that you two got a sense very early in your life about what you wanted to do in terms of being a teacher. And that's why I knew we were going to have great conversation today, because you and Michael shared this element of knowing at a really early age that you had a message of some sort that you wanted to be the messenger for.
And, you know, I think that's really true of pretty much anybody who's been really successful in life and business. Don't you agree, Michael?
Absolutely. For me, it was, you know, going back to that fortune cookie that I got when I was 9 years old. And it was actually a quote by Walter Bagot. And when, for me, it's like I saw a lot of people getting let down by criticism and being let down by people saying you can't do that, you'll never amount to that. Only, you know, people that are really, you know, that are in the industry or that are nepotism or that get a silver spoon in their mouth, those are the people that make it in this particular environment. so don't even try it. And those comments, I saw people quitting, stopping, and not going further with their dreams. And I saw that as the wrong way to go. I said, well, why don't you use that? And I actually used it to my advantage. When people put me down, people told me you couldn't do that, that actually fueled me. It actually made me realize that, well, I'm going to prove them wrong. It actually gave me the power, more power to accomplish the things I wanted to do.
It did for me as well. Yeah. Really interesting how that works, isn't it?
Yeah. So you can, it's all your perception. And then you have a dream and you have to believe in yourself. And, yeah, it's just I had an idea and I didn't see anybody else doing it. And I just decided, well, if I know that, from all of the great successful people teach us that, you have a dream, you go for it, you don't quit. And I think people know this. I think most people intellectually know that concept, but they just don't want to go through the many years that it takes and not knowing how long they're going to have to wait for it. And that's also, I think, the wrong way to look at it. I think if you take your dream and you start going for it just out of the love for it, out of just enjoying a hobby, making it a hobby that you enjoy, and then it doesn't matter when it comes. You don't have that expectation over your head. But it will come.
I love what you just shared because it really is a shift in perspective from people's idea that somehow there's the magic moment where they're an instant success or, getting found. I think Hollywood, in part, crafted this idea of instant success, that has seeped into our culture when, in fact, there's almost no such thing as an instant success. And the most successful people say, yeah, that I was the 30-year overnight instant success, and so on.
Yeah, and I'm not the one to say that I didn't have that when I first came to L.A. I had that coming on me as well. I wrote a screenplay and I thought, oh, this is going to sell. I was just like, oh, I'm going to be like Matt Damon. That's it. I'm going to sell the screenplay and then I'm going to go for it. Well, guess what? That was 10 years went by and I never sold a screenplay. And it took me 10 years to actually say, well, all right, I'm just going to do this on my own. And so I did get let down, and I realized that you can't – that instant success thing is that can be like 1% out of the people that I would say is luck, is pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what I would say.
Yeah, yeah. So that original screenplay, what was the idea or the concept that you were trying to bring to the world?
Well, that started when I realizing when the New Age sections in the bookstore started to come up, all of a sudden, like in 1993, for the first time you can actually go into a bookstore and there's a New Age section, and that's when I started on the spiritual path and started reading everything from Eastern mysticism to Hinduism to Tibetan Buddhism, and I realized that there's so many of these ancient truths and teachings out there, even in all the Judeo-Christian religions, about peace, unity, oneness, nonviolence, and love, and oneness. I said oneness. And I didn't understand why we weren't getting it, why we were still fighting each other and fighting wars and assassinations and terrorism. And I realized that, okay, this is all new stuff. A lot of people are no one is even reading this stuff, and these books have been out for centuries, and now we have them in the major bookstores, but people are still not getting it. So that's when I decided, all right, I've got to search for something that's going to tie it all together, because I think that there were so many different ways that these teachers were talking about it that people just weren't getting it. They're like, oh, that's not for us. This is capitalism. This is we police the world, all that nonviolence and world peace stuff isn't for us. And that's what I grew up that way. I grew up thinking, no, we can't live in peace because we have to protect our borders and all that. So I set myself on a goal to find a common theme in all the spiritual teachings and then bring it to Hollywood and attempt to make a film about it. Because after seeing The Secret, I discovered there was a market for documentary films on positive thinking and the law of attraction, and that's right. So if that can work, then we can take metaphysics and do the same thing. And that's what made me decide to do this film.
Yeah. So when you started crafting this film, were you, sitting on the beach in Santa Monica with your feet in the sand? Were you, sitting in a cupboard? How did it come about to go from the concept into the script itself originally?
Yeah, that's the second part of the story. I was walking through the bookstore, through the used book section, and that's when I saw a book called Three Magic Words by U.S. Anderson. And I read the back, and it totally resonated with me. And I said, I'm going to take this home and see if this common theme I'm looking for would come up in this book. And I read it and got all the way to the end, and I found that common theme that I was looking for.
Mm.
I was like, there it is. And now I can start the screenplay. And then I started writing it. And as I put it together, I met up with a friend of mine who became the co-producer, Maura Hoffman. And she was together. We just put up a green screen on the wall. I was living in a little apartment in Hollywood. And she had known a lot of these best-selling authors and human potential speakers like Debbie Ford and Dolores Cannon and Gary Renard. And I had gotten in touch with Neil Donald Walsh. And these are big New York best-selling authors. And we were able to bring them in and interview them for this project. And so I was working a full-time job. This was being done on weekends. I was going out to shoot in the mountains with my HD camera. So it was really a skeleton crew and with no money at all, and was able to put it all together. I didn't know it was going to be anything anybody even liked. It was kind of more, like I said, it was a hobby. It was just doing what I came to LA to do and accomplish it, to see if I could make something that can have that message and that people can, be transformed by.
And I've seen the movie, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it's really remarkable what you've put together. And I love what you just shared, which was this aspect of looking at the opportunities that exist because other people aren't paying attention to it. So this notion of taking the story, and instead of trying to turn it into a fictional story and some huge Hollywood production, was going the opposite direction into a documentary style.
Right. And yeah, and here's the other thing about that is that this was my first film. I actually attempted to do a short film that fell through the cracks because I didn't have any money, and I was trying to shoot it over a period of, weekends while I was working a full-time job. And the actors, the actors change. You lose the consistency. They don't show up. So, I mean, that's the reason why you have to, why you want to shoot a film and, like, with a schedule, with a contract, and make sure the actors are going to show up. And so that fell through. And then I learned that, maybe I'm not approaching this the right way. And I decided that I was going to do the documentary style, even though I don't like documentaries. And that's why I think the film came about so unique, and because I needed to make it something that it would entertain even me, a guy who doesn't like to sit through documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably why it has the music and the way it flows. But I decided if I were going to make a first film, after seeing all my friends in the industry make these films, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on their films and fail miserably because they have no concept of story, I said, I don't want to go down that path. I don't want to make a movie and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and I have the actors stink, the story stinks, and it's a waste of time, right? So I said, the only way to get around that hump, well, not failing on your first film, is to make a documentary. Because to me, a documentary, I'm not going to say that it's easy, but you don't have to worry about the acting so much, and you don't have to worry about the story so much. You know, you just have to worry about the message and the style of the editing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so my decision worked. Most filmmakers don't make a hit success on their first try.
Right. And what I'd like to do, and I know Gina's got all kinds of questions too, is dive into how relationships played out throughout moving this along. Because I know the story of funding, but I'd love for you to share
Absolutely.
How that came about.
Absolutely. There were many people that I would meet along the road of making this movie, and people who wanted to be involved in it, people who wanted to help out, even people who wanted to be a part of it and fund it. And what I had to do was this movie was about oneness, and it was about the being connected to the source and to the earth and to every living being and feeling that connection. So I really had to live that truth. And so I knew that the people that I worked with on this project needed to resonate at a higher vibration, at the vibration that this movie was teaching, that we all, that if we all resonated on, we would live in peace and we would feel that love with each other. And so when people that I met, it was like an interview. And I looked at them and I looked into their eyes and I gave them a hug. And if they were very open and very interested and they had a very genuine interest in the project, then I knew that they were right for it. If I saw that they were just doing it for the money, or they were just doing it out of ego, then I didn't work with them. So I looked at the energetic connection that I had with them before I moved forward with them. And I think that can go for business and for anything. You just look in their eyes and see where their interest lies. If they're really truly interested in the message and what you're doing and changing the world, then I say yes. You get a yes. But if it's anything, if it's out of ego or anything else, you know, then you have to really use that intuitive power that we all have.
And I think there are so many people who feel such a sense of passion for their project that they lose track of the team that they're trying to craft as part of their endeavor and come from fear or scarcity thinking about, you know, find the money anywhere, get the money anywhere, and we'll sort it out on the other side. So your executive producer came to you in a pretty unique fashion.
Yeah, exactly. I had a rough cut shot of the movie, and I didn't have any money to finish the film. And that's when a friend of mine showed it to his father, who showed it to his editor, and his editor said, "Hey, if you give me this amount of money, and I'll finish the entire film for you." And I said, "Great, sounds great." And I put a Facebook message out. That we needed finishing funds for the film. And Goodney Goodnison, who was one of the guests we interviewed in the film, came through and said, "How much do you need?" And I said, "Perfect, let's do it." And so we were able to finish the film with the funds from him. And and he lives that truth. He was one of the guests in the film that was completely just, his whole message is what he's all about. And so he really felt he had that an interest in it, and so he came through with it.
Now, for the folks who are listening who don't understand how filmmaking in Hollywood works, there is a sort of haphazard progression. So I think I shared that Warner Brothers picked up the movie, but I'd love for you to share the trail that you had to take of relationships from, so you've got your rough cut, and then what happens? How do you get a film so it's being shown on screens, let alone premiering in London? And
yeah.
What's happening now?
Well, let me just start that path with this one. Once the film was finished, and Goodney, he has an organization in Tokyo. He said, "Let's screen this in Tokyo." And so we went out and screened it in Tokyo, and this was just the first cut of the film. Now, there's no distribution yet at all. He flew us out to Tokyo, and we showed it, and people liked it. And I was completely surprised. It was like, wow, people actually like this. Wow, how did this happen? And so that's when I said, "Goodney, let's do an L.A. premiere. Let's do one in Hollywood. Let's do it at the Harmony Gold Theater. And let's just show the whole town that metaphysical films can be something people really enjoy. And so Goodney went ahead and said, you got it, and he funded that. And so we got about 400 people and sold out of the Harmony Gold Theater and made it a huge thing. We had the press there, and, you know, we basically introduced the first metaphysical film to Hollywood. And then I had the website. I connected all the social networks, and I started just pushing out the message out there. And that's when I got a call from someone who I worked with about 10 years prior. I did some editing and effects for. He was just a filmmaker at the time. And he calls me and says, "Hey, I'm actually a distributor now, and I just discovered your movie Three Magic Words, and I want to get you distribution." And I'm thinking, "Oh, great, okay, I'm looking for distribution." I didn't know he was talking about major distribution. And I said, "Great, have you seen the movie?" And his name is Tony Boldy. And his name is Tony Boldy. He goes, "Nope, I haven't seen it." And I'm like, "Tony, don't you think you should see the movie first?" He's like, "I already know I'm going to love it." He's like, "You sold out 400 seats. You know, the name, the title, the branding, the message." He goes, "I know you." He's like, "I already know. Don't even worry about it." I'm like, "Okay, but I think you should see it first." And so I met with him, gave him a copy. He saw it. He said, "All right, I'm going to let you know what the next step is." A week later, he calls up and goes, "Warner Brother is wanting your project." And I'm like, "What?" Mm-hmm. And then he said, but it's only, it doesn't fit the requirements of 71 minutes long. So you need to somehow figure out how to add 11 more minutes to the project."
How long was it at the time?
It was an hour long.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So at this point, I had quit my job, my full-time job. I had sold all my furniture. I moved out of my apartment. I was living in an RV because at that point I said, when I finish this movie, I'm getting out of the rat race, the 9-to-5 rat race. I'm not doing this sitting in traffic for 2 hours every day just to get to Burbank from Marina Del Rey and barely make and live paycheck to paycheck. That was it. I was done. I had 4 years of working on this film. I was ready to take a break, and I was just I got an RV. And I was living on the street near a friend's house of mine in the valley. And that's when, you know, Tony said, you know, Warner Brothers. And I'm like, okay, I can finally get my life back together. And but it needed to be 11 more minutes. So I contacted my editor, who was no longer available. He was on other things. He didn't want to work on it. And so I decided I had to do it on my own. I took my laptop. And for the next 3 weeks, I sat at Starbucks and Menchie's yogurt because they had an outlet. with my MacBook Pro and my Final Cut Pro editing program, and I put together outtakes from the movie, from footage that I had, to create the 11 more minutes at the end. Now it has a cool credit roll sequence.
A really cool credit roll, it's true. And I was so curious as I was watching it, because it works wonderfully, but now I know the behind the scenes.
Yeah, now you know. It's to meet the requirements for Warner Brothers. The length. And you know what's cool is I always wanted that stuff in there anyway. I mean, yeah. And the editor I was working with wanted to make the film shorter. He goes, "Oh, no, you got to make it short. You got to make it, you know, because it's a documentary. You don't want to bore people." So right now what you're seeing, thanks to the Warner Brothers requirements, is the director's cut.
Yes.
So that's how it came to be. And then they loved it. They saw the version. They loved it. And then we got the distribution.
Now, just as a complete side note, as a result of hearing that story, every time I see outtakes during credit rolls, I'm now going to wonder if it was part of the original concept or they needed
right.
to pad X number of minutes to fill out, you know, some requirement.
Yeah. And, you know, that goes with everything you see in the film. I have people coming up to me saying, "How did you do that, like, effect with the oars around the people? I love that. It really awoken something in me." That was a result of trying to fix an error. So we did it. We did a green screen error. So we did it to everybody. And again, it was more of a director's cut because I always wanted to make a film with, you know, depicting the electromagnetic field around each person.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it can go with a lot of things.
I love accidents.
Right. Exactly. Serendipity is what they call them.
It's true. Accidents and mistakes that turn out to be brand new effects everybody in an industry is going to try and mimic.
Right. And you never know where those accidents actually came from if they actually were put there.
Yeah. Too funny. You know, we're going to get into the details of upcoming projects that you have and so on. I'd like to spend some time first talking about we have people who are listening from all around the world. Some of them are entrepreneurs. Some of them are multipreneurs with multiple passions that they're juggling at the same time. Some are professionals. We have everything from authors and speakers and experts in different fields and so on. And there's this need in every arena to craft relationships with people who understand who we are, what our expertise is, where our interests lie, what it is we're trying to create in the world to build relationships so that we're creating our community and our team that are all moving things forward together. And, you know, the early part of your story is very much about, well, I don't want to exaggerate and say, you know, working in isolation, but it was very much about being the lone visionary and then trying to communicate that vision to others. Was there a tipping point where it shifted where people were now hearing about what you were working on and coming to you, wanting to build a relationship with you to be part of that project or upcoming projects and so on?
Yeah, there were a lot of people like that. And, again, I intuitively I got a no from about working with them because a lot of people, they did know what the message was and they were into what I was doing, but it kind of felt like they just wanted to piggyback off of all the work I was already doing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, he's already been doing this and that and he's got this in place. I want to be a part of it. And I could tell right away. Now, the people that wanted to genuinely partner up with me, those are the people I worked with. Like Maura Hoffman was who became my co-producer, and a lot of my friends who came on who had experience in the industry who I worked with. So you do definitely, and in the entertainment industry, you really have to be careful who you trust, and it's best to work with friends and people you've already been with or worked with. Because a lot of people will try to extort you or try to take credit for the project in the end, and which I had that too. So it's just like any business, I think.
Yeah,
it's just like any business.
Yeah, and people lose track of that. They think it's its own little strange world and that there aren't business aspects to it.
Oh, yeah, there are.
Yeah.
I have not seen the movie yet, but hearing the story, I am really, really looking forward to seeing it. Where can somebody find the movie and actually get a chance to watch it? Because I think the message is certainly one that I know I want to read or see.
Yeah, thank you. Right now it's all over the internet. Video on demand, it's DirecTV if you have cable, AT Universe, and it's iTunes, Blockbusters, Amazon, Instant Video, and Netflix.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the fact that it launched first in Tokyo. Now, my first reaction is, oh, did you have subtitles on it for Tokyo? Or was it
We did. We had subtitles.
Uh-huh.
We did. And what's interesting about that is that we paid a lot of money to get the subtitles in Japanese. And here's the thing. Now, this is a metaphysical film, so it can be a little bit... It can be a little bit shocking for some of this information to people that are really stuck in their religious programming. And unfortunately, one of the person that subtitled it was Christian. And so she put her own kind of slant on the message and made it sound more like a religion that this movie was kind of bringing up into the, like a new religion. And we were really upset. So we got our money back and said, we want a new translator. And I wouldn't have known unless somebody approached me in Japan and said, you need to make check your subtitling because it made it sound this way.
Mm.
And yeah, so we had to get that redone.
And so it's now available in how many different languages?
It's available in 14 different languages.
Cool. So amazing.
Yeah, you can see them. Yeah. And I'm not saying this goes against anyone's religion at all. Since I brought that up, I've shown it to everyone from every walks of life, and they all loved it. It's pretty much pretty non-denominational. It's pretty easy to understand this concept. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Linda, we have got to introduce Michael to Tim Bennett.
I did.
One of my students, oh, great. One of my students and good friends is a guy by the name of Tim Bennett. He's been here on our show before. Tim's over in the Philippines and is now getting into working with filmmakers to help them market their films, get financing for their films, etc. And you've got such a great story about how this film became a reality. I know it would really help all of the people that he works with.
Yeah, and I've already been talking with Tim through an email, so I'm really looking forward to connecting with him more.
Yeah, I think you guys
awesome.
Are going to really do fabulous.
Wonderful, because I've got so many other projects that I have to get done.
Yeah, so, you know, I would love to talk about those other projects because I'm fascinated by them. I know Gina's going to have all kinds of questions to pose about it. Before we go there, one of the things that is helpful for people to hear is they think, oh, Warner Brothers picked it up. There we go. Warner Brothers took care of the marketing. But that's not all there is to marketing, even in this kind of business. So what are the things that you had to do to create not only the movie's presence, but your presence in the world about this?
Well, one of the things is this right now, radio shows and TV interviews. I mean, you have to constantly be doing your own marketing, constantly promoting yourself. I mean, I've gone through trying to find publicists that are too busy doing other people's stuff. And, you know, again, that goes back to finding someone who's so interested in what you're doing that they're going to give you all the time and attention. I mean, you could pay someone $10,000 a month and they might be, you know, only halfway interested in what you're doing and you don't even know it. And then you find out what have you done this month? You know, and you find out you just wasted all that money. And I've been learning as I go. I've never had a big company where I needed any to promote or a publicist. And so I'm finding that learning how to do a lot of things on my own and doing a lot of things myself is very helpful. Because then when I get to where I can hire these people that I really need, I'll know if they're actually doing things or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what I say to all of the entrepreneurs I work with is understand what it is you're delegating before you delegate it.
Yep. And the things that you can't do, I mean, well, let me rephrase that. Hire the people that can do things better than you can.
Mm-hmm.
Even though when you learn how to do it, but you still want to learn how to do it so you know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to do so much, and I'm still doing it, so much promotion and marketing for this, and using all the social networking and the internet and blogging and what else am I doing? And screening all around the world. I'm setting up screenings. You know, this year we're planning to do Sydney and Brazil and South Africa and India.
And what does that mean, setting up screenings for those who are
listening? That means going out to these countries and setting up a huge theater or venue and bringing in over 300 people and letting them see the film in their language, subtitle in their language, and then doing a film panel on stage with Q&A for the guests in the film and whoever, you know, whoever can come out at the time. And this is really important because this gets the word out. It creates the word of mouth. It creates the buzz. And I'm also looking for international distribution. So it'll also, you know, create the buzz out there for someone who might want to pick it up internationally.
So as a business, it doesn't end just because a distributor picks it up. The fact of Warner Brothers having picked it up doesn't mean you take your hands off the reins and say, okay, they'll take care of it.
Well, really, all it means is when a major distribution picks up the film, they're going to distribute it for you, and they're going to put it, you know, right now they're doing the digital distribution. And the physical DVD is being released by the direct distributor, Viva Pictures and Gravitas. And and Warner Brothers has agreed to do the digital distribution. So, and there's no marketing that's been done at all. They wanted to wait to see how it would do with the word of mouth and through the internet. And right now they're, and that's because it was such an independent film, low budget independent film. They don't normally do that kind of thing. So again, this was kind of like unheard of for this kind of film to get picked up in that way. And since they don't do it, they decided they're going to wait and see how it does. And so far, so good.
And it becomes a multi-year project.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's its own little business that's got this multi-year life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
What are the other projects that you're working on?
The next one is called Tesla. And that is not the car. That is the man, Nikola Tesla, who was one of the most influential engineers, scientists, and visionaries on the planet that has given us everything you see that is electronic, radio, wireless, you name it. He gave us electricity. And he has been so unrecognized and unappreciated, and the credit has all gone to Thomas Edison, because of the times and the powers that be, pretty much stole all of his ideas and all his patents. And all this information is all out there. People have made several documentaries about him. And I think he finally deserves the credit that he should get. And so this film is going to be about his life and the information that the public was never told about him and who he was and why he was doing what he was doing.
And I think there's more in the roster, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. There's a film called Atlantis, which is a love story based in the backdrop of ancient Atlantis. And we all love Titanic because it was a love story. Well, this is the same kind of thing. You have the sinking ship, you have the sinking Atlantis, and you have two people falling in love. And then...
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
I just want to share, you just gave this perfect pitch in three sentences.
Thank you.
For all of us who are in different lines of business, that's what we all have to do when we talk about who we are and what we do, is figure out how we give that perfect pitch that everybody goes, I got it.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about me is like everyone knows somebody that's super, you know, spiritual, metaphysical, new age, weird type of thing. Well, I'm kind of here to show you how to not make it weird, how to make it understandable, and how to get it to where you don't have to meditate and ohm over a crystal. I mean, because this stuff is really real. I mean, the Eastern mystics and teachers from all times have been teaching us these truths about our divinity and about our oneness and about the energy within all things and about our connection to that. And so I'm here to show you that it doesn't have to be woo-woo. It can be explained in perfect scientific terms, in terms that anyone can understand. And so my movies, that's why I call myself a metaphysical filmmaker. So another film that I plan to do is an ancient Egyptian timepiece, time travel. Kind of like a Stargate meets the Ten Commandments. That's going to be one of my favorites because I'm a big sci-fi fan. And then another one I plan to do is called Skeptic. And that's about a guy who kind of battles his own mind to discover the truth behind alien abductions and alien invasions and world domination and extraterrestrial giants in our past and, you know, all that stuff, and he tries to discover the truth behind that, and he goes on a path. So it's like a common man, a skeptic, who hears all about other stuff and goes through all these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one called The Master, that is about a scientist who discovers the missing link in Einstein's equation, and it takes him all around the world, where he meets the masters of mysticism that teach him that the world is not quite what it seems.
So it sounds as though some of these upcoming projects are documentary and some of them are not.
No, no more documentaries for me.
Ah, because?
I don't like them. I don't like them.
Tina, we can talk with him about what it is to change a business model.
Well, I'm not a fan of documentaries either, but just reading what I've seen on the Three Magic Words website, I've got to see the movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what does it mean in your world, in your business, to make that kind of shift in business model?
Well, I never wanted to do a documentary. Mm-hmm. I only did it because I didn't want to fail on my first film. And mm-hmm. this gave me the experience and the knowledge to now do a real movie, one that mm-hmm. is a drama, one that has, you know, has a real heart where you can feel the actors, that you can sympathize with the lead actor. And you can mm-hmm. go on a journey with that person. And that, you know, everyone loves a real movie. And that's what I really wanted to do in the first place. Mm-hmm. So this just got my foot in the door.
Go ahead.
Again, it costs a lot of money to do a movie of that. To do a movie and succeed, that is a drama, and it has a real story. And so I wanted to make sure that I knew what I was doing before I went to that.
Mm-hmm. When you look at what it takes next, making the shift, what has to change in the relationships you have in the filmmaking industry or in getting a film of that sort funded and so on?
What do you mean, what has to change?
Is there anything in particular that changes? Are there new relationships that you need to cultivate, or that this new business, this moving from documentary to regular big screen?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. I'm not going to be wearing all the hats anymore. On this next one, I think I want to just sit in the chair and say, action. that's a huge, huge leap from the last one, because last one I did the editing, the effects, the titling, the writing, the, you know, everything. So the people, yeah, I mean, everyone, the people that are on the projects are definitely going to change too. I'm going to be really even more careful of who I work with this time, because I had some hitches on this last one. And because sometimes when you're working with no money and when you're starting up a company and you've never done it before, the best way to succeed in it is to be a yes man.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you see that movie with Jim Carrey, The Yes Man, it's a really great movie to watch for anyone starting a business, because if you say no all the time, you could miss up on an opportunity where somebody could have either introduced you to someone or get the money here for you or something like that. So I had to be most of the time a yes man, even though I did have my intuitive filter out there of who I wanted to work with. But if there was more positive than negative, I would go with that person and just see where it would lead me. And so for this next, for the future films, I'm going to be a yes man. But I'm also going to be very, very selective of who I work with now, because of I don't want to have to go to any kind of problems and legal issues with and any battles with anybody. So it's important.
There's a very common element that you're bringing up that crosses, you know, every kind of business, which is putting together teams that you trust. And there's the stage where you have to. You learn by trial and error how people think, how people make decisions. Can they understand your thought process, your decision-making, and partner up with you so that you feel comfortable and safe and confident delegating to others? And I've had conversations in past years with people who said to me, oh, I've got this great idea that Richard Branson should do. Well, I know he's built his businesses because of building trusted teams and going back to those teams over and over. And the same thing with a Woody Allen or in any other industry, these folks and you surround yourself with folks who have been, the relationship's been learned, the thought process, decision-making, the true skills, maybe people are redeployed into different roles and so on as that learning takes place. And it's interesting to be able to see ahead as you're going forward on projects. It becomes, in a sense, this a spider web of relationships, because you'll build relationships with people you trust, but as your projects get bigger, the sheer numbers of people that need to be brought on board are now going to depend on who they're connected to.
Right. And I would say that it's really important, if you want to be the decision maker, if you want to be the person in charge, then don't partner with someone, because then you're going to be sharing that control. If you think, like, as a director, it really, movies do not work if you have more than one director. You have to have one person that makes the creative decisions, because it's going to come from their vision and their idea, and that's the person you want at the head. And in any business, if that's what you want to be, then you don't share the power, because the person is going to take that from you and want to start making decisions, and there's going to be a tug of war. Now, if you want to partner, it's absolutely fine, but I would be very careful who you do that with, because, like, I mean, even my dad had a problem when he partnered with someone who tried to take the whole company. And so I would, you know, if you're going to do it, make sure you know that person and you trust them and they're a friend.
Yeah, I'm working with a business owner right now whose partnership is, you know, they shook hands and agreed to dissolve the organization, and suddenly money was flowing out of the bank account because the other person decided, okay, we agreed to a buyout, I'm taking my share. So hold on, we have, like, no agreements, no documents. Could we roll this backwards, please? You know,
well,
to an actual.
And even when there are friends, I have seen many instances of people who were friends their entire lives, like since they were 4 or 5 years old, now in their 40s, and even then, all of a sudden, the minute money comes into the equation, everything changes and all bets are off.
Yeah.
It's kind of too bad about the money, isn't it?
It really is. So, that's how it happens in every case I've ever seen.
You know, it's sad because money's not even real. It's a piece of paper.
Right.
And I don't know if a lot of people think about this. I think about it all the time. And we just printed up paper to hold value, to hold trade value, to buy things. And if you're going to let that get in the way of a friendship, that's you're thinking wrong. Your thinking is off.
I just watched the movie A Darker Truth last night with Forrest Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
No, I have not. I've heard about it.
Oh, fantastic movie. And in the movie, there's a guy, his name is Jack, and he's a radio show host. And the show is called The Truth. And it's kind of a deep show. And the premise of the show is that everything can have a value attached to it so that it can be bought and sold. But that maybe that's not necessarily such a great thing to do. And throughout the movie, it's about having water have a value attached to it so that this big company can be the controlling interest in water all over the world. And it actually, in some ways, over-exaggerates it, but makes a really good point in the process, because this company so badly wants to control the value of water that they actually start fining and imprisoning people when they collect rainwater to drink.
Wow.
Now, that's really interesting. It's not like that happens naturally. It's something that greedy people choose to do, and it's probably not such a great thing for society. But it was a very interesting movie. Made you think.
Yeah, that goes right along with charging money for the air that we breathe and the water that we drink. And there's a lot of movies about, society controlling everything, all the resources, and putting a price tag on it. And that's going to change, and it has to change.
And what
so
I love
much
about everything we've talked about with you so far today is it's a beautiful example of a premise that I teach, which is in building a business, the key to long-term success is to strategically monetize so that you can go out and just serve to your best abilities, knowing that the money will follow. If you just serve and don't strategically monetize, money doesn't necessarily follow. It should, but it doesn't always. but the combination of serving and strategically monetizing actually lets you really go out and be free to just do the work you're meant to do, because the money really does follow every time. And I think that's really what you did with the movie.
Well, I have a secret.
Tell me.
I know where the money is. I know where if you want to make, if you're going to start up a business and you want it to be successful in this day and age, I have two words for you. Go green. Because that's where it's all going. Where all, everyone wants a new sustainable way of living where we are not polluting the environment. We are not putting toxic waste in the ground. We are not eating it and putting chemicals. We are not putting GMOs in the animals. And if you, the business is going that way, you get ahead of the game where you're actually going to make a difference on the planet. You're going to clean it up. You go to these expos and everyone's going green now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, that's where it's at.
Yeah. You know, in the 1800s becoming the 1900s, it was all about technology. And the more you could focus on technology, the more likely your company was going to be to succeed. I totally agree with you that this century, technology days are over, and everything is about technology that lets you be more green, more sustainable, more organic, all of it. I think that's a really good direction for us to be going to.
Yeah, and a lot of people say, well, wouldn't you be ahead of your time? You know, why do something ahead of your time? Well, do it, because time will only flow forward.
Absolutely.
And, in making
this film and interviewing the number of people that you interviewed, did you have any big lessons that you learned in the process?
Yeah, absolutely. Every day was a lesson. If I could, I guess,
not so much
big...
about making the film, but about the message in the film.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People are most people have never heard of it before.
Mm-hmm.
Have never even thought about it before. Have never even been taught it before. This message. And they're just stumped. Sometimes we're sitting in the after the film. I'm in a Q&A, and no one has a question. They have a blank stare on their face. And I'm like, okay, well, is this the first time everyone's ever heard this? I'm like, yeah. And I said, do you get it? And they're like, yeah, we get it. But like, they don't know. They don't have a question about it. It just kind of just sits there. I'm like, okay. So, yeah, I think I would say this is a film that is ahead of its time, just because this is the first time that we're really hearing this come out to the public. And it's not in the esoteric philosophical books anymore. It's out there on the screen.
For my community that's listening to the show, this is a beautiful example of the fact that there are always two kinds of problems that people have. And the things that you can put out in your business can either fall under one or the other. There are those problems that people know they have, that they're actively looking for solutions to, and then there's that whole other set of problems that falls under the category of you don't know what you don't know. And people seeing your movie for the first time and hearing that message for the first time, it's a solution that's a you don't know what you don't know kind of problem. They never even knew that it was possible until your film showed them. And sometimes that can just blow them away so much that they really are dumbfounded and speechless by it.
Yep, exactly.
And
I don't know that it's ahead of its time, but certainly a very timely message, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for those of you who are wondering what
the perfect time.
Well, good. I'm glad you feel that way. I hope so.
Yeah, and the point that you just brought up about sitting in an audience, because you've been so immersed in a topic that you are now an expert in, we each forget in our areas of expertise that the people we're trying to serve often aren't just one step behind us, but it's all new to them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So It's cool. You know, it's so funny. I think we each in each of our areas of specialization go through that experience. I know, you know, my clients and students go through it. It's really cool hearing that you were sitting there, as you said, with people with this sort of startled expression on their face, dumbfounded, as they're absorbing this new information that's going to, in fact, rewire how they perceive themselves and perceive the world and their relationship in it. And
Well, knowing that about the film suggests to me that social media probably has played a really critical role for you in getting exposure for this message. For those things that are you don't know what you don't know kinds of solutions, one of the easiest ways to get people to bridge the gap between where they're at and where your message needs them to be is to get other people who see it, who get it, to then go out and spread the message for you through things like social media. Have you done anything with social media on purpose to really work the message and getting people to share it?
Absolutely.
And so what have you done?
YouTube and Facebook. Those are the two magic words. The movie's called The Three Magic Words. But the two magic words to promoting a film is YouTube and Facebook. Because, or any business, I mean, every time I get a chance to shoot a video or a clip, I do it and I stick it on YouTube and then I link it to Facebook. And you're probably going to get 100 people to see it on that day. And then every day after that. So it's really a tool that we've never been able to use this effectively before in business. And it works.
Last week, our guest was a young woman by the name of Yifat Cohen, and she calls herself the G+ go-to gal, G+ meaning Google+. And one of the things that we talked about at great length was this whole concept of using Google+ Hangouts to live stream messages onto YouTube. Have you tried that yet?
No, that's fantastic. I'm glad you just told me about that.
Well, go listen to our show from last week. You'll find it right on Blog Talk Radio on the Breakthrough Direction show page.
So you can live stream. Okay, so you can live stream with Google+.
Uh-huh.
Awesome.
When you go into Google+, there's a little button that says Start a Hangout. And when you first connect it, you have to actually check another box that says Enable Hangouts on Air, and you'll have to verify your YouTube channel to be able to use it. But what's really cool is when you just upload a video to YouTube the way that you have, if you've noticed over the last 18 months or so, it doesn't always get as high of a search engine ranking as it used to.
Mm-hmm.
The video tends to be on page 2 or page 3. When you enable the Hangouts on Air to do live streams onto YouTube, the resulting recording that it creates actually outranks uploaded videos by 2 to 3 pages sometimes. And it can mean a lot higher number of people seeing it. President Obama actually has started doing some live streams on YouTube, getting millions more people than he used to just uploading videos onto YouTube to see them.
Wow, you just gave everybody listening some really great tips.
$1 million.
Yeah, really, really big deal.
That's great. Thank you.
Well, go play around with it. Not this weekend, but following weekend, I'm actually doing a day-and-a-half workshop all about this topic. I would love to have you join me on a Google+ Hangout live stream to YouTube to talk about how it works from a filmmaker's perspective so that all of my students can really see that. That would be very helpful to them.
I would love to. This is the way I'm going to be live streaming from now on. We've been paying so much money for these companies to do it for us, and sometimes they don't even work very good. They don't even look that great. And this is free?
It's
free.
Completely free. Google has just transformed the world, and it just happened about 3 weeks ago. It was in beta for a year, and that's why Yifat Cohen is such an amazing expert, is she was one of the first people who was invited to beta test the system.
She's one of 100 businesses that actually do beta testing for Google+.
Yeah, so it was amazing. And, you know, I'll follow up with you, Michael. And
thank you.
Yeah, because this is golden, and Gina, fabulous to have him on the program as well.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
Yeah.
So we only have
a
few seconds left. Where can people find you online?
You can go to www.3magicwordsmovie.com, and then you can do the digit 3 or the number or the word 3, either one. 3magicwordsmovie.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it has been our pleasure having you here today. Thank you so much, and I'm going to go watch the movie tonight. I can't wait to see it.
Wonderful, and please write a review. If anyone who sees it, they like it, reviews are very helpful. Now, the DVD is not available yet. It hasn't been released yet, so all you can do is rent it and video on demand, and that's great.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
I will absolutely do that. Thank you.
Michael,
and
thank you so much for being with us.
I love the show. I love being here. Thank you.
Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.